Karen just told me how long I should be talking, so I appreciate if you could just drop something very loud on a table so I know, or just wave to me, whatever. Because when I get talking about AA, I get completely jazzed about this because, whoo, what a wild ride it's been. So my name is Karen H. We used to have to always say what our last initial was because there were so many Karens in the rooms. My name is Karen H., and my home group is Alfreda Group. I'm a little nervous. I'm sorry. My sobriety date is September 30th of 2014, and I have a sponsor, and she sure knows she's my sponsor. She gets frequent phone calls from me, and that's important to me that my sponsor gets frequent phone calls from me because I do appreciate her taking her time out to help guide me in this life. So Karen and I do go back, and often after Karen and I would have conversations, it was kind of like, what do I do with this? Because I had no idea how to communicate. Even after about a year and a half of sobriety, I was still working through some of those emotions and some feelings. And then God put Karen in my life to give me some challenges. And good God, was that a challenge, right? And so God never completely removes something from your life until you learn from it, right? He usually brings things back around. So when Karen said she was moving here, I'm like, what is God trying to teach me? But I can completely say that I am so grateful that a part of my home that I lived in for 30 years has come down here to me to help join me in my sobriety here. Because since I've arrived here 4 years ago, it's been nothing but a wonderful ride. I love, 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 love Georgia. Plus, it's nice and warm here comparatively to Pennsylvania. So A was everything I thought I never wanted and everything I know that I can't live without today. A was going to be a last resort for me. You know, I grew up in a very large family. I'm one of seven, various moms and dads. Kind of looks like a little bit of an org chart when I'm trying to explain who's mom and who's dad, who, you know, my brothers and sisters belong to. You know, the 60s, people were starting to do a lot of experimentation with drugs and alcohol, which, of course, took them away from being true parents. And my parents certainly fit that mold. I grew up with very little supervision, with very little care, with very little concern. I was just supposed to be there to work. I was cleaning houses at 8 years old because I've got a little bit of OCD. And so my mom, you know, took that under consideration and put me out there. But at least she only put me out there to clean houses, right? It could have been so much worse. But growing up, I thought I had the worst parents in the entire world. I was an alcoholic because I had the worst parents in the entire world. I wasn't loved. I wasn't taken care of. I wanted the Cleavers as parents, and I got the Osbournes. You know, and that's not what I wanted. And what Karen wanted was an easier life, you know, a life beyond my wildest dreams. But I really didn't know what that even was going to look like until I arrived here in the Alcoholics Anonymous. So I never really drank growing up. I got married at 19 because it was much better than being where I was. I had my children at 21 and 23. I have two beautiful sons. They're a big part of my story. And I'll try not to cry when I talk about that because they are my world. I was told by the adults when I was growing up that I was ugly and stupid. So I tried my entire life just to be pretty and smart. The problem with that is you never really know that you've arrived. So I kept trying harder and harder and harder to be pretty and smart. Never really drank. I was busy being a mom, raising my children. I was trying to be the better mom because my mom sucked. You know, and for a long time, I let my mom know that. I let my mom know how bad she sucked as a parent. And today we're best friends. I talked to her on the way over here, and she hung up, and then she called me back, and she goes, I just want to let you know I love you. You know, for as bad as I was to that woman, you know, in my 20s and 30s, and even into my early 40s, for her to offer that forgiveness to me was amazing. So I was about 32, 33 years old, and I found King Alcohol. It was my solution. My kids were teenagers, and I got a redhead. And if anybody needed a drink, you know, if you don't know anything about redheads, they are pretty damn stubborn. And my son is pretty damn stubborn. But, you know, at this point, when I started drinking, I'd already been married and divorced. Married at 19, divorced at 24. You know, and then I gave it a little bit of a break, and then I got married again. Because, oh, he'll fix me, right? This guy over here, he'll fix me. The first one couldn't fix me to save his life. The second one, he's smart. He's a rocket scientist. First one was a cop, you know, and the second one was a rocket scientist. And I thought, he's smart. He can get this. But, you know, things happened, and we wound up getting divorced after 4 years. And then I met Bill. And Bill was a playboy. Bill loved to drink. Bill loved to smoke that funny green stuff. Bill had a motorcycle. And you know what? I'm going to have a little bit of fun now. Now it's time for me to have fun. My kids are a little bit older. And Bill loved to see Karen drunk. Every opportunity he got me drunk. And I had no idea how quickly that would take hold of me. Now, this is not Bill's fault, right? It was my choice to drink the alcohol. But it took me very quickly. Within 3 years, I had my first DUI. And that DUI, I started drinking on the way home from work. I was drinking just about every day at that point. And I'm on the beltway of Baltimore, much like there's a beltway around Atlanta. I was on the beltway of Baltimore. And I got lost going home from a job that I'd already been working at 6 years. A little bit drunk at 7 o'clock at night. And I got off on the wrong road, and there was a T intersection at the end of that road. And I plowed my minivan into a woman who had just picked up her son at daycare at a church. And I hit them so hard, I plowed them into the fence of that church. Her son's shoes came off, her son's glasses came off. I hit right on the side that he was on. And wow. Now, I can tell you I did not stop drinking. But the legal ramifications, I had 5 charges against me because I not only hit them, but I continued to drive down the road. I don't remember anything about this accident. Not a thing. At 7 o'clock at night on a Tuesday night. I didn't care if you were in the car, if you were in the car with your kid. I didn't care about anybody else. What I cared about was what was going on up here. And there was a lot of restless, irritable, and discontent stuff going on up there. I'm not good enough. I've been married 3 times. My husband is, you know, controlling. You know, he kept wanting me to tell me how sick I was and wanting to try to convince me that I was sick. And it was such a crazy place to be. My children were living with their dad at the time. We had an agreement. They would live with me for the first 10 years when they needed the mommy. And the second 10 years when they needed their patooties kicked, they would go live with him. And I did not know what that was going to do to me. So I thought, I'll work on my career, I'll work on my marriage, the kids can have such space for mom, because I was a bit controlling and a bit OCD, and I did not like who I was or where I was. So alcohol was sort of the solution for me, you know, that I could forget about all those things. So I wound up coming into AA. I was voluntold by the judge to go to AA. And I did, and I met a great group of people. I was living very close to Maryland at the time. I found a great home group there. And I stayed sober for 3 years. I went to 1 meeting a week, and I went bowling once a week. And I stayed sober. Did I work the steps? Meh. Once. Sorta. And did I do everything my sponsor told me to do? No. I thought she was jealous of me. So, how many of us think that in the beginning, right? So, my sponsor got married and moved to South Carolina. And I wound up moving to a different town up closer to Hershey, Pennsylvania, called Lancaster. I didn't like those people. They weren't like the people in Maryland. So I don't think I need to go to those meetings. You know what? I think I should date. I think that would be better. I think I should just go out and date. So no meetings, no sponsor. Let's go date. We all know what happened. Sent me into a 5-year spiral. 5 years. The end of that 5 years, I didn't get married again. I am now 12 and a half years marriage free. Yay. I'm 8 years sober, but 12 and a half years marriage free. You know, at the end of that 5 years, where I ended up is packing everything I had in my car. I was living with this guy, and I packed everything in my car. Because the only resolution I had was to end it. I'd gotten another DUI, not you know, nothing serious. I just kind of ran over one of those construction cones. It got stuck in my wheel well, and I get pulled over, and the police officer's like, yeah? Did you hear that? I'm like, what? He goes, ma'am, have you been drinking? And I'm like, just take me in, because I thought that would be the end of it, but it wasn't, because it was the day before my birthday. I'd just gotten fired from a job because I'm an alcoholic. That's what we do. And so I stood in front of the liquor store, ready to end it. Everything I own in my SUV. And my phone starts to ring. And that sponsor that moved to South Carolina, we're still friends on Facebook. And I'd call her every now and then. Hopefully not getting that drunk late night telephonitis, right, when you're drunk. So I'm trying not to answer the telephone. And I'm swiping a damn phone, you know, and I'm already half crocked. But I wound up answering the phone. And she says, Karen, are you okay? Something told me I needed to call you. And I'm like, yeah. She goes, yeah, you're a horrible liar. And so I wound up confessing to her that I had been drinking. And she's like, you know, you don't have to live this way anymore. So what do I do? What do I really need to do? Because I can't live this life. This is not meant for me. The only thing I can do is just die at this point, because I'm no good to anybody. My kids won't talk to me. You know, I'm no good at my job. I hate my job. I just hate everything right now. I hate everything. And so I'll tell you why my kids won't talk to me. I dumped all my problems on them. I told them everything. Your kids don't need to know everything about you. They don't need to know all the woes of relationships and the woes of the job. They don't need to know at such a young age what a sinful world that we're living in right now. You know, and my perspective of that sinful world under the influence, you know, that was not fair to them. August 19th of 2013, my son was in the military and he was deployed overseas for quite a period of time. And so this is a year before I got sober. My son came home and didn't tell me. And all I wanted was to know that he was okay and safe. So I found out a month later, because I saw a YouTube video of his homecoming. Because I'm a geek. I'm a computer geek. I do Google searches. I'm smart. No, I'm not. That I blew up at him. I'm your mother. You owe me. You owe me an explanation of why you've been home for a month and you didn't even come see me. And, of course, I was drunk at the time, and he knew it. My birthday came a month later. He didn't call. Thanksgiving came. He refused to see me. Christmas came, nothing. Birthday came, I had to mail him something as a gift. And then June comes around, and he's applying for a job as a police officer. So if anybody knows anything about background checks and police officers, they look at the entire family. And my son did not know about my DUIs. So when the guy that was interviewing him took the folder and sat down in front of him, he goes, you lied to us. It's your mom's folder. Take a look. That phone call I got that June said, I never want to talk to you ever again. You're going to cost me my life, my career. You've been nothing but a horrible mother. And so this is June before I got sober. I got sober in September. That's why I was going to kill myself. That's why I wanted to die. Because if my kids can't even talk to me, if my kids can't even trust me, I mean, my jobs can't trust me, my parents, whatever, you know, my family's in Philadelphia. I've dwindled away all my friends. All my friends just want to drink, you know. And so life really wasn't worth living. So Maren told me when she got me on the phone, still standing outside the liquor store, with every, like that Beverly Hillbillies back in the parking lot in the car, you know, she says, you're going to go to a meeting every day. I mean, every day? Yeah, every day, 90 and 90. Okay, you're going to call me every day. I'm going to be your temporary sponsor from down here. I'm in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and she is down in South Carolina, down by Myrtle Beach. Okay. She says, then you're going to get yourself a sponsor, and you're going to get yourself not any sponsor. You're going to get yourself a sponsor with a bullshit button because you're full of shit. All right, let's keep it real. But that woman saved my life that day. And so I decided not to drink. So decided to go to meetings. So I still wasn't convinced I could do this, because this is round two. Round two. And I'm sitting in meetings and I'm crying. I can't read the promises without just, I'm asking women to sponsor me. And when you see a chick in the rooms falling apart at the seams, crying her eyes out, who wants to sponsor that girl? Nobody wanted to sponsor me. So I finally found a woman. I thought maybe she'll say yes. If I corner her. No, I go to a spaghetti dinner, and I don't know why I wanted to go to spaghetti. I don't eat spaghetti. But somebody recommended I go to a spaghetti dinner. But something told me, go to the spaghetti dinner. So I'm there, I'm listening to the speaker. So I'm like, oh, this is great. This is fellowship. It's much like this, right? You have a meal, then you have the speaker, and everything is great. Guy gets up, he sounds like a radio announcer, and he's really got his shit together. I want that. But I'm sitting next to this guy, and I'm just pouring out everything. You know how we do, right? Blah. I'm just puking up my whole life. And he looks at me and goes, you need a sponsor? Because the girl that I went with actually left because she had a headache. And I'm like, I'm going to talk to this guy because maybe he has a solution. I'm just trying to find a solution. I'm just trying to get some peace going on inside of this restless, irritable, and discontent. And so he says, let me introduce you to somebody. And he introduced me. This woman looks like a short version of Jamie Lee Curtis. And her name is Alicia. And Karen will tell you, we called Alicia the drill sergeant. She, do not waste my time. So we go and we meet, and she says, why don't you come to my house on Saturday? Be here at this time. Do not be there 5 minutes early. Because if I'm brushing my teeth because I just got done lunch, or if I'm with another sponsee, you will wait till that moment that I will open the door and you will come in. Okay. Sure. So she takes me to this beautiful little sunroom that she has with two chairs and a book on little frogs. Everybody knows what frogs stand for. Fully rely on God. So she's got little frogs everywhere. And she sits me down in the chair, and she goes to get a chair from the kitchen to bring God in. So I will be completely honest with her about everything. While she does that, I look down on this little end table, and there's that little Staples button? It says bullshit. She had a bullshit button. And I'm thinking, there's something going on here because somebody's in cahoots to get me sober. So I said, do you happen to know a woman named Marion in South Carolina? Because I'm feeling a little weirded out right about now. But was that not God? Was that not God working in my life? Doing for me what I could not do for myself. And that was the beginning. You know, she says, Karen, are you willing to do whatever it takes to get sober? I'm like, yeah. No, Karen, I'm asking you again. Are you willing to do whatever it takes? If I tell you to go here and do this, are you going to do that? I think so. you kind of get, all right. And then she kept reminding me. Whenever I told her, I'm not sure. Yeah, Karen, do you remember when you said you'd do whatever it takes? You know, and that set a foundation for me of honesty and integrity, dignity and grace. She would always tell us, you can be a woman of dignity and grace. Because I can tell you, when Karen is irritable, restless, and discontent, Philly Karen has a horrible mouth, and she comes to visit every now and then. So I try to remind myself about the dignity and grace that I can have in my life, and the peace that I can have in my life because of this program. So we work the steps. We work the steps frequently. We would often meet, and she'd say, well, where are you? What step do you think you need to work on right now? Where do you think that you're lacking? You know, and that created a thought process in me, a constant review process in me, to help me move forward and really move my sobriety in trajectory of where I am today. And I absolutely love it. And I've taken a lot of those tools that I've learned from her, you know, and I've used them with my sponsees. And I absolutely love my life today. If you had told me 8 years ago, September 30th of 2014, that this would be my life today, that would be living in Georgia with my dream job, with a really great boyfriend, I'm happy to say. Don't know if I'm ever going to get married again, but I've got a really great, wonderful boyfriend who supports me in my sobriety. And that's really important to me. But most of all, I have a group of friends who are willing to drive to come see me wherever I am. And I was actually going to leave. I was actually going to go back to Pennsylvania. And the home group, the Alfreda group, home group, all got together and were like, you can't leave, we like you. We really like you, we want you to stay. And one of the guys, as I was walking out the door, he goes, Karen, you've run away from everything else in your life. Why are you doing it again? Oh. God, again, doing for me what I cannot do for myself. You know, and I see that all the time. All the time. But there are things I got to do. I got to keep a constant connection. I wear a cross ring. I married God. I made him my husband. He's also my father. And I try to keep a very close connection as much as possible. Sometimes I do get too busy, and I start to realize that restless, irritable discontent is coming back again, right? Philly Karen's mouth starts shooting off, and I'm like, ooh, we got to do a reset here. You know, back to dignity and grace, back to where God is basically covering me as his child, you know. So I want to go through a couple of things here. The steps, the principles, the traditions all mean the world to me. My sponsor also told me that I needed to be of service as much as possible. And I took that literally. Karen and I both. Wherever there was an opportunity to be of service in Alcoholics Anonymous, we both jumped up and said yes. We never said no. And so I'm a bit of a service junkie. Up north, I did all kinds of things. We were both on the Pennsylvania State Convention Board for several years. I chaired 1 year. Right after I left, Karen got to chair. And that's a big responsibility. We both love conventions, and I love being on the committees of a convention. I also have the privilege of going into the Forsyth County Jail over in Cumming every Monday night and working with women that will be released. My next group will be released in about a month. And we work with them on their values and their value system and their dignity and grace. And we work steps 1, 2, and 3 with these women. And to see the change of a captive audience over a 9-month period of time. In 9 months, we work 1, 2, and 3. We do a lot of readings, and we talk a lot about the lives that they used to lead and the lives that they want to lead, you know, for the future. Where do you see yourself? Where do you want to be? A lot of these girls are in their 20s and 30s. They have a huge life ahead of them, you know, and they have a hard time believing that we walk in there dressed like this, you know, that we were actually once like them. You know, and I tell them, I could be right where you are. I should have been a few times. Because that first DUI, you know what my consequence was? Send your PO a letter and $45 a month. 5 charges dropped. I did 0 jail time. I did not learn my lesson from that first DUI. The second DUI was a little bit more stringent. It was in a different state. And I paid more for that, and I did community service for that. But I didn't hurt anybody. I could have killed somebody. You know, and I'm very well aware of that, that I could have been there in that jail with those ladies. You know, and I could have broken probation by going back out and drinking again. Because if you get 2 DUIs in the same state in a row, you do jail time. You can lose your license for up to a year. Mine were in 2 different states. So they didn't see each other at the time. They weren't sharing their databases at the time. That worked sort of to my benefit. I'm grateful that Alcoholics Anonymous has shown me how to live a better life. Steps 1, 2, and 3, turn it over. 4, get freaking brutally honest. You know, and I would call my sponsor when I was doing my 4th step the first time I did it on my 2nd round, because I did it thoroughly. She kept saying, honest and thorough. Honest and thorough. I pick up the phone, I'm like, I feel like crap. I've been a horrible person. She goes, just be honest and thorough, Karen. The rest of it will work itself out. You know, and that helped me to alleviate some fear. But when I went to my 5th step, I realized all the different forms of fear that I had in my life, stemming from when I was a child, you know, and all those marriages. I have a fear of not being loved. You know, I have a fear of not being good enough. You know, these past 2 years, I've gotten a new sponsor. And she's amazing, and we are working on emotional sobriety. Mm-hmm. And what a beautiful thing emotional sobriety is. Mm-hmm. You know, to feel as though I belong wherever I am. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm valuable and I am worthy. You know, how often do we crave to hear those words? You are valuable, you are loved, and you are worthy. You know, just by yourself, minus all of your accomplishments. She often says to me, Karen, what are you minus your accomplishments? Because she'll say, how you doing? I'm like, oh, work is this, and this is this, and this is this. No, Karen, minus the accomplishments. How is Karen doing today? Where are you emotionally? Are you centered? Are you walking with dignity and grace? Are you helping others? Big key. Back to service work. I'm also in the Atlanta Roundup Committee. If you have not been to the Atlanta Roundup, it was held down at the King and Queen buildings. This year we're moving it to Duluth because of location changes and spending way too much money on coffee at some of these Marriott hotels. So we're getting cheaper coffee this time. It will also be the last weekend in July. And what a great, great, they have plays. I think they're going to have a comedian this year. We had a game show last year. We had Family Feud and some amazing speakers, absolutely amazing speakers. So they'll be bringing a mother-daughter group from AA and Al-Anon. The mother's the Al-Anon and the daughter's the AA. And I think they're Angie and Amanda. If you haven't heard them, they're going to be there this year. And I'm super, super stoked for that. So I encourage you, if you're new, please try to make peace with some of that past. You know, I'm not super close to my siblings. A lot of them think that I just don't know how to drink. They've offered to teach me, and I have politely declined. They're all in Philadelphia, all in the same area. They all live up there. My sons are 30 and 32. They live in Delaware, and I visit them twice a year, and they have homes. They have beautiful homes that I could stay in. They let me stay in their homes. Mm-hmm. That's an honor and a privilege to allow my son, to have my sons allow me to take part in their life. I have grandpuppies. I just got to meet when I was up there about a month ago, and they're nothing short of amazing. And it's a way for us to connect, for them to send me pictures of the puppies. But we still struggle a little bit, you know, to communicate and to talk, and I'm working on that. My biggest struggle was my mother, because my mother, growing up, my dad's a biker, my mom danced on bars. So it was quite interesting growing up. I thought everybody's mom danced on a bar, and I found out when I went to Catholic school for a couple years, not everybody's mother danced on a bar. So, and I got called to the principal's office to say, you can't say that here. but I had a lot of work to do on that. And it's funny because I would have a rubber chicken hanging from my rearview mirror every time I called my mother, because my sponsor would remind me that she had a hard life too. She has her own struggles too. My mom likes to smoke that funny green stuff. Still today, she's 70-something years old. She still smokes the funny green stuff every day. And I have to, you know, calculate that in my head. I don't know how much she's had, but I treat her with love, care, and respect because I want to be a good daughter. That's all God asks of me, right? Is to be a good daughter. Try not to hurt other people, you know? If you can't love them, just don't hurt them. You know, and I've been able to make amends to my ex-husbands, most of them. Not that first one. I just saw that it was going to be too harmful. I've been able to make amends to my sons, and I continue to try to make living amends to my sons by being a good mother, you know, and being present and listening to them as carefully as I possibly can. But my mom and I have grown very close in the last 3 years since I moved here to Georgia. And I will continue to work on that relationship because I'm pretty sure I probably will not have her forever. So, and I will miss that relationship when she's gone someday. And I hope that someday my kids and I can have that. The freedom that I experienced because of this program, you know, I kind of stopped at step 5, 6, and 7. Love, Drop the Rock. If you have not read Drop the Rock or worked through that with a group of people, please do so. You know, that burden that we carry is way too heavy. I saw someone speak and said, I got a glass of water here. A glass of water is not very heavy, right? But I'm going to hold it out here. I'm not going to move my arm. It's just a glass of water. But now I've held it for about an hour. What's happening? I'm starting to feel a little exhaustion, aren't I? And then I'm going to hold it for 5 hours. Now I'm going to hold it for 2 days. How much pain and burden and heavy does that start to feel after a period of time of carrying that and not moving it? So if you're struggling with something, move it, put it down, give it up, set it aside. Because it might not hurt right now, but over a period of time, it's going to wind up hurting. So 6 and 7 teach me how to get rid of that, you know, how to drop that rock and be able to work on a freedom to be me. That's what I call it, free to be me. I can tell people I'm not right, but I'm a lot of fun. But, you know, 9 and 10, you know, making those amends, nobody really wants to admit that they're wrong. I certainly didn't want to admit that I was wrong ever. Right, Karen? we had lots of arguments about that one. You know, but step 10 is, to me, there isn't very much covered in some of our books and some of our literature, but how big is that to be able to review things during the day and at night and say, what am I carrying that I don't really need to? What burdens am I carrying of other people even? You know, I can certainly take on the burdens of work and the burdens of my kids and the burdens of the home group. If you haven't been to a group conscience meeting, you can certainly carry those burdens with you too, because they get pretty heated, especially when you got a really big home group. Right, Chuck?
Yeah.
Whew. Chuck and Michael, there are two guys. We call them the guys from the Muppet Gallery. They sit there and they just make sure that we maintain our traditions the way that they were intact, and we're grateful for them. You know, 11 and 12 are very important to me, especially 12, where I can be sure that I can give it away. Even walking through the grocery store, saying hello to somebody. I make these rubber chicken stickers I give out. I don't think I have any with me. I meant to grab a bunch, but it says rule number 62, don't take life so damn seriously. You know, nobody can take life seriously when they got a rubber chicken, which is why I had it hanging from my rearview mirror. You know, whenever I get into a bind, I look at a rubber chicken sticker and go, okay, it's not that important. You know, you just got to let it go. You know, and if I can't let it go, what do? I pick up that 500-pound phone and I call 8 to 10 alcoholics that are going to tell me to let it go. You know, and chances are I'm probably going to listen at that point, because I'm a little thick sometimes. You know, I think I can fix everything. I think I can fix everybody. But with that, I know I'm ending quickly, but I do so appreciate your having me here and to be of service, you know, in any way that I can. And for feeding me, that's a super bonus there too. Anytime somebody's willing to feed me, I'm all in. But I sure hope that that you can go forward with something that I said today. I do want to end with one of my favorite readings here. Okay, here it is. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize that we know only a little. God will continuously disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something that you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. So, one more thing. alfredagroup.org is our website. I'm a web developer. We have a very large home group. We have 5 meetings a day and 2 on Zoom. So go to the website. You can either do in-house meetings or Zoom meetings. They're all fabulous. We have a great group of people. But if you're ever in the neighborhood, please come and see us, and we'd love to host you as well. We don't have the spread you all have, but sometimes we have cake. Thank you all.